Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
MSW Media.
Hey, it's Kimberly, host of the Start Me Up podcast. If you like your politics with some loose talk and salty language, you're going to love my show. I interview the coolest people like Mary Trump, Kathy Griffin, and DNC chair Jamie Harrison. The Start Me Up podcast has an easygoing, casual style and a strong emphasis on left-leaning politics. We also have frank discussions about sex and more than a few spirited rants. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup or wherever you get your podcasts and start listening today.
Rule of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated alike. That there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans, one rule for the powerful, another for the powerless, one rule for the rich and another for the poor, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's clean up on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be clean up on aisle 45.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 26 of Clean Up on Aisle 45. It is Wednesday, July 14th, and I'm your co-host, Allison Gill. And with me, as always, is Andrew Torres.
Oh, Allison, thank you so much. I am really looking forward to our show for today, in which we cover the most bonkers court appearance ever since I Am Not a Cat.
Although I thought of the I Am Not a Cat multiple times.
Oh, my gosh. It would not have been any less crazy
while watching that Zoom call. But first, we have to thank our new patrons who have supported us over at patreon.com/aisle45pod for as little as a dollar an episode. So thank you to Happy Tyler Rhodes, Lisa Carrera, Gravy Seal, Tim the Enchanter. Oh, you know much that is hidden, no Tim. And I'm starting to think the people I support on Patreon only care about me for my money.
Well, that is not true. I have to say, we also care about you for what your money can buy, right? In terms of goods and services. But also, big thank you to Glorine Franco, to Wewez, Joa Joa, Christine Lind, and are you tired of Windows? Try Pop OS, Linux for everyone. Search Pop OS. And if you'd like us to advertise your alternative operating system through a one-line Patreon name, you too can sign up over at patreon.com/aisle45pod.
I like it. Advertise for a buck an episode.
Yeah,
that's a really good going rate. Okay, now on to the A block. And Andrew, my first question for you is, what's a Daubert motion? Because that's all they would fucking talk about is that, well, if we can have an evidentiary hearing or a Daubert motion, you'd be able to call this bullshit out yourself, Judge. It's just incredible what happened today. I took copious notes, but I wanted to get that out of the way. I wanted to find out what a Daubert motion was because that seemed like their go-to thing, that in an evidentiary hearing. for these Kraken lawyers.
Yeah. So first, let's unpack with a little bit of background here. This is a this was a telephonic hearing held in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan. The case is King versus Whitmer. So this is one of the Kraken lawsuits, and it's before federal U.S. District Court Judge Linda Parker. And today was the hearing on sanctions for each and every lawyer who appeared on behalf of or was named in any pleading filed by the plaintiffs, right? And that includes, right, so this was not a formally a Trump joint. This was a bunch of different named plaintiffs. They are Timothy King, Marion Sheridan, John Haggard, Charles Richard, James Hooper, and Darren Rubing, who were who sued the state of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, the Board of State Canvassers, alleging, you know, that in a state that Joe Biden won by over 150,000 votes, that, you know, Hugo Chavez sent demons through Dominion voting machines to convert votes into votes for Joe Biden. What was notable was the judge required, as I said, each and every lawyer who had ever appeared on behalf of the plaintiffs to be here today at the sanctions hearing, which, by the way, when a lawyer says that, that's not a good sign. And so all of the lawyers themselves retained counsel to represent them at this hearing today. And these are, you know, Kraken lawyers. I always mispronounce it. Anyway, these are Kraken lawyers. So this is Lynn Wood, Sidney Powell, Howard Kleinhandler, a who's who of awful monsters. And it was hysterical. So
the Kleinhandler and Powell and those were the ones who filed the suit, or are those the ones who are representing the lawyers?
Yeah, no. So they filed the suit. So I'm glad you asked the question. Let's unpack, because it's multiple layers. So the named plaintiffs, the people I talked about, Tim King, Marion Sheridan, all of these are just, you know, lunatics, filed the suit. They were egged on to do so by Sidney Powell. They were represented by a team of loser Kraken lawyers, and that team included Sidney Powell, Howard Kleinhandler, Lynn Wood, as well as some folks who have been involved in multiple of these loser lawsuits. Julia Haller, she put on the best show today, Brandon Johnson, and Emily, oh boy, I need to make sure I get her name right, because she used the "it's my first day" defense over and over again, mm-hmm. which was kind of amazing.
There was Campbell was also.
So what happened was, right, so all of those people that we just named themselves hired lawyers. They hired Donald Campbell, who is a Michigan lawyer who specializes in handling attorney grievance cases, to represent. So if you're ever in a case in which your lawyer has to hire a lawyer in the middle of the case, that's probably not great.
Yeah, boy. And I tell you, after the way Campbell talked to the judge today, I don't know that he's going to want to keep working in Michigan.
He may be sanctioned himself. We are going to get to it. Right. So that's the multiple layers here. By the way, the name I couldn't quite come up with was Emily Newman, whose defense was, "it's my first day." Newman.
That's right. I should have remembered that.
I know. We should have. So now to get to your question, what's a Daubert hearing is, if this were, you know, if we were doing it Jeopardy style, I would say, you know, if the answer is what's a Daubert hearing, the question is, how do you know that the lawyers to be sanctioned ran out of good legal arguments and began just throwing nonsense out there? Because a Daubert hearing is a hearing upon which the court can adjudicate the merits of a potential expert witness. And if you're thinking, What the fuck does that have to do with sanctioning Sidney Powell for being a lying liar? The answer is not a damn thing, right? Over and over again, the argument being made kind of followed this track. The judge would say, Mr. Campbell, do any of your clients, have they done any due diligence in vetting any of your expert witnesses? When they said, and then for like 3 hours, it was like, so here was one of your dipshit expert witnesses who said, you know, I just watched all the ballots vote, you know, flip the votes from Biden from Trump to Biden and then get sent off to Venezuela. Did you vet that statement? And then all of the lawyers would kind of sit mute for a second. And then Campbell would say, well, Your Honor, we're not here on a Daubert motion. So you don't know that that expert witness is not qualified. And then the judge would kind of look askance at Donald Campbell and say, you tried to admit as an expert witness somebody who was an auto mechanic who filed under the secret code name of Spider. Are you really telling me you want a Daubert hearing on that? And then Donald Campbell would say, well, you know, without a Daubert hearing, you can't prove that my clients were, you know, idiotically negligent lawyers. And the judge was like, okay, well, if that's your argument, so noted.
Yeah, and their other repeated defense seemed to be, well, all of these affidavits, which she did go over in quite a bit of detail, one by one, all of these affiants, which is a person who signs an affidavit, all these affidavits signed by the affiants, which were written by professional affidavit writers, were filed in a previous lawsuit, Constantino versus, what, Detroit? And thereby, since they were filed in another suit, those lawyers, we assumed, because lawyers do due diligence, we assumed they did their due diligence so that we didn't have to. And I felt like yelling, you're going to be sanctioned because you didn't. Right. And you're relying on someone else that did. And so, I mean, they kind of were throwing the Constantino lawyers under the bus, who probably deserved to be thrown under the bus.
Indeed, they do.
but that seemed to be their, well, this isn't a hearing on that. And then their other defense seemed to be like, well, if you just have let the case go forward on the merits, you could have decided these witnesses were full of shit on your own, judge. Well, why do I need to do that?
All right.
Over and over and over.
Yeah. So I want to tackle both of those two points that you just made. I will tell you that the Constantino stuff provided truly the most entertaining misunderstanding on the day, in which Julia Haller, who, you know, by the way, has been practicing law for longer than I have, right, seemed truly not to understand at a level that, you know, because this is a Zoom call and there were between 17 and 20 people in the Zoom call the entire time, set up in the boxes like the Brady Bunch, right? And there were moments in which you could see the mouths kind of hang open of every single person except Julia Haller making these arguments. So let's unpack, why is the Constantino case important? The Constantino case, you will recall, and I do not know why it was not referred to as such. If I were, the lawyer on behalf of Detroit, who, by the way, did an amazing job, did a much better job than I would have done, right? Because this is David Fink, outside counsel hired by the city of Detroit to represent it in this case. If I were trying to explain the Constantino case, I'd be like, you know, that's the one that got parodied on Saturday Night Live. And Carano, the witness we're talking about, was Drunky McDrunkerson, right? With the whole, like, well, I saw them picking the ballots and they did it. And instead, you know, they all politely referred to the Carano affidavit and everything. But so here was the argument. The argument was, time and time again, you had the exact same evidence that was before a similar court in Constantino, for which there was a public hearing. We know about that because it was parodied on Saturday Night Live, in which the judge in that case said, you're bonkers and full of nonsense, and these affidavits are, you know, smeared in human feces on toilet paper scraps. Like, get out of here.
And Fink had mentioned that multiple times. Yep. Every time somebody brought up Constantino, he would be like, look, yes, those motions were filed. Judge Kenny, who was the judge in that case, in the Constantino case, went through this particular affidavit, because the way that this particular Zoom call for the sanctions hearing was set up is that there were opening discussions, and then the judge went through affidavit by affidavit, and, well, I should say claim in the complaint that refers to affidavits, and then went through the affidavits, and then and one at a time. And yep. All of them are just fantastical, was a word used today. And Fink would come back and say, again, those were filed. Just because they were filed, you didn't vet it. And before you submitted your complaint, Judge Kenny tore apart that affidavit. Yep. Like, and so don't even act like you had no idea and you were relying on the goodwill due diligence of the previous lawyers in the Constantino case.
Yeah, and let me try and make the best analogy that I can. If suppose you and I have a range of disputes against each other, and we have piecemeal lawsuits that are filed, and I introduce an expert witness on, I don't know, damages at the first trial, and the court rules that my expert is not qualified, dismisses the case out, and it doesn't impose sanctions, but essentially says, you know, Mr. Torres, you should be embarrassed for introducing this piece of evidence in this case. The question is, can a subsequent lawyer introduce that exact same evidence supported by the exact same affiant, writing almost word for word the exact same affidavit in another case? And if your answer to that is, well, obviously, of course not, congratulations, you're smarter and a better lawyer than Sidney Powell. But that's what they did, right? They've got this core group of like Terpsichore and Spider and, you know, these lunatics who are willing to lie under oath, who get caught out for lying under oath, that they don't get charged with perjury, because nobody gets charged with perjury unless you back out of a plea deal or, you know, there's some, you know, similarly egregious circumstances. And then they just packed it up, cut and pasted, and filed again over and over again in a bunch of different jurisdictions. And we've talked about that on this show where, you know, references to, you know, like the Detroit Processing Center show up in the Pennsylvania lawsuit, right? Because again, these are 62 different hack job, cut and paste jobs with the same common nucleus of operative morons, right? And all of these, so this was your first point on Constantino. The question that the judge was asking was, can any of you lawyers come in here and defend that you did a modicum of work in figuring out whether the stuff you wanted to put in front of this court for me as a judge and for a potential jury to rely on as potentially true, as potentially dispositive of this case, did you do the slightest amount of background work to figure that out? And the only argument, that's why, you know, ties back to the original question, that Campbell had on behalf of his soon-to-be-sanctioned clients was, well, you know, we're not here at a Daubert. We would be prepared to defend the qualifications of Spider if this were a Daubert hearing, which, no, they would not. And that ties into your second question, which is, you know, sort of talking about the difference between this hearing and a trial on the merits. And why don't we get into that after the break?
Yeah, sounds good. And I also have some questions about the First Amendment.
I thought you might.
Everybody, we'll be right back. Stay with us. Hey, everybody. It's Allison Gill for Clean Up on Aisle 45. The world is racing to get back to normal, and we're all rushing to meet up in person again. But after the year we've all had, getting back to feeling normal takes time. I found it exhilarating, but also very stressful and anxiety-inducing to go back out into the world. I'm trying to remember the importance of prioritizing my mental health during this time. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by it all, you are not alone, and that's important to know. And it's also important to find the support you need to face those feelings and move forward. I like to keep things simple. That's why I love Talkspace Therapy. The Talkspace app makes it easy to connect with your licensed therapist on your schedule without having to wait weeks before your next appointment or to go out and sit in a crowded waiting room. I get to have convenient live video sessions all from the comfort of my phone, so I can do it from anywhere and take my therapist with me. Talkspace therapists have developed tools to help you cope in difficult times, whether you're a parent, student, millennial, if you're experiencing depression, anxiety, or just someone who's having a hard day. Talkspace can provide the support to help you feel better. Talkspace offers individual and couples therapy too, in addition to medication and prescription services. With thousands of licensed therapists available to match with, Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform to help you sort through any issue. Talkspace therapists are experts in dozens of specialties, including anxiety, depression, relationships, and more, to help you start feeling better. So set goals with your therapist and they can help you make sure you're really progressing and start feeling better with a single message. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and you'll get $100 off your first month with use promo code CLEANUP, all one word. That's $100 off when you use promo code CLEANUP, all one word, at Talkspace.com. All right, everybody, welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about, oh gosh, so many things, but my two main points are the defenses. First was the Constantino case, and the second part, which you were about to get to, Andrew, tell us.
Yeah, so, and that was, how does this match up to sort of the merits of the underlying argument? I and you and I had this kind of back and forth on Twitter as we were both watching sort of open-mouthed this unbelievable 4+ hour comedy routine unfold over YouTube. It is notable. So let me explain what happened. You've alluded to it. But I want to just note, as a lawyer who has successfully argued and won multiple sanctions motions against opposing parties and against opposing counsel, right? I want to illustrate how rare that is. And B, in both of those, in each of the last two successful sanctions motions that I have argued in federal court, those have been decided on the papers, right? Like, there was not a need to have a hearing. It was, we put forth, like, this is the misconduct on the other side, right? So most recent case, I had an opposing counsel and their client who refused to stop contacting my client and my client's donors and employees and contractors with these, like, you know, breathless, you know, breaking news kind of updates, right? Proposing to characterize the litigation. And I sent like a dozen polite letters and said, come on, man, like, they're represented by counsel. You got something you want to say to my client, say it to me. Don't have your client draft these stupid inflammatory emails and send them off to my client. And ultimately, like, we just had a disagreement on that. And they were like, nope, we think we're totally entitled for my client to send deranged, unhinged emails out to your client. I did not mention I could talk about his client, you know, 3 times a week on podcasts. But, like, that's not how I practice the fucking law, because you're not supposed to do that, right? I respect the notion that when the other side is represented by counsel, you communicate through counsel. Anyway, I moved for sanctions. We won. We got sanctions. That was decided on the papers themselves. The judge sort of looked at it and was like, okay, yeah, on balance, I think you ought not to, you know, send harassing emails, so stop it. What this judge, Judge Linda Parker, wanted to do was to go point by point through the allegations in the complaint and ask each and every one of these lawyers, hey, what work did you do to figure out when you made this absurd, ridiculous, unsupported, scandalous allegation in your complaint? What work did you do to figure out if that was remotely plausibly true?
Like, a great example is the triple hearsay that was discussed for quite a bit. And in this particular triple hearsay thing, we've heard about this before. You've talked about this before. Somebody who was an attorney, who said they were attorney but acting as a poll watcher, was told by another GOP challenger that someone told him that they talked to someone who was crying because other people told her to backdate ballots. And so it's literally my best friend's brother's boyfriend's cousin's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. It is that. And so she's like, you're gonna put in triple hearsay as evidence? And of course Campbell's like, absolutely, Your Honor. And was just a dick to her. But that's like one example of the diatribe of these different affidavits and their claimants. And because because the judge made specifically to tell us for sure that it's not just the affidavits, it's that you reference them in your complaint, and then she would take them to the complaint page and paragraph number of their complaint and how it was subsumed in this language about how, you know, the Michigan election was fucked up. And so that's one example. I just wanted to, sorry to interject that.
No. That is a perfect illustration. And, you know, it tied back together with your previous point that what Campbell wanted to do and failed utterly in doing so was to say, well, Your Honor, like, we're just the lawyers. You can't hold us responsible for everything an expert witness says. Like, yeah, and there was even kind of this air of like, well, you know, when we call an expert witness, like, they might be a lunatic. Who the hell knows? Like, and Campbell would say, like, you know, and the other side's got an opportunity to cross-examine them. So, you know, if we flood the field with a bunch of, you know, spiders and terpsichores and what, then, like, they'll just, you know, discredit them on cross-examination. And there's almost, look, like, that's the kernel of a fair point, right? Like, there is a level at which, right, the trial process is meant to adjudicate, you know, the
witness
the
statements. Yeah, witness testimony.
Exactly. But when you package everything together, when the entirety of your 1,000-page complaint are scandalous allegations with no evidentiary support that have been discredited in dozens of other proceedings, at some point, right, like the judge's point was, you have to look at this and go, it is below and beneath my duty as an officer of the court in coming in here in saying, well, this might be right. You know, it's not right.
Yeah. And aside from it having been adjudicated in another court or being called ridiculous by Judge Kenny and Constantino, she's also like, the language is very vague. You represented somebody as being perplexed, right, as evidence.
Yeah.
And like, I thought, or, you know, it occurred to me that maybe, or I got a feeling that.
Yeah, I was suspicious. Yeah, no, the perplexed and the suspicious each took up about a half an hour. But you know, I want to kind of wrap all of it together. This is calling the lawyers into account for the substantive arguments that were made in the complaint. And their sole defense was, well, you know, you could cross-examine us on this. It illustrates you could cross-examine the witnesses on this. It illustrates the utter ridiculousness of the claim, and we've discussed this on this show and on opening arguments, that is sort of circulating around the right-wing osphere, that is like, oh, well, you know, all of these liberal judges prevented us from making our case, and they never looked at the evidence. This was looking at their so-called evidence, and they could not run away from it faster, right? Like, they could
exactly.
Not. They got on a rocket-powered motorcycle and, you know, burned in the other. If you were at trial, right? Not you would have to introduce these witnesses. You'd have to call them to the stand, and again, you would be subject to the rules of professional conduct that prevent you from suborning perjury. And we would be here, you know, in a similar but even more densely layered proceeding that says, you know, Mr. Kleinendler, you stuck somebody on the stand who just made stuff up, and you knew that they made stuff up because you've lost 62 of these lawsuits, and you know that there's no basis for this anymore. It was truly astonishing.
And then they made a First Amendment argument, and I thought that this was an interesting discussion too, by trying to convince the judge that filing the claim, the bullshit that they put in their claim, referencing these affiants who are full of shit, is within the First Amendment rights of the lawyers. And the judge's argument, basically, very simple question. She goes, well, then tell me, in what circumstances would sanctions be appropriate? Or are they never appropriate because lawyers can just submit to the court whatever they want under this super broad, is it an all broad First Amendment protection? Do you tell me when? Tell me under what circumstances I could sanction a lawyer if that's the case.
Yeah.
If not here, basically. If not here, where?
So this was a question that was directed to Stephanie Lynn Gentilla, who is the lawyer that has been retained by the plaintiff now that they've fired all the Kraken lawyers, right? retained by the plaintiffs to argue the appeal. She has no chance of winning on appeal, right? It's crazy. This kind of made the Twitter sphere for a while because the end of her sort of three-page brief as to why she should not be held responsible for sanctions was, well, and you know, lawyers have a First Amendment right to say kind of whatever the hell they want, and I will not insult this court with a citation of cases that are far too numerous to mention. And this was just a chef's kiss moment in which Judge Parker was like, I promise I won't get offended. You want to tell me what that citation would be? And you could just see the color drain out of Stephanie's face. And so the judge said, well, if you don't have a citation, I have one for you, which is Mezabov versus Allen, 411 F3rd 712. It's a Sixth Circuit opinion. So binding in Michigan. And it says whether an attorney can claim First Amendment protection on his own behalf for his filing motions and making courtroom statements on behalf of a client is a question of first impression in the circuit, right? So this was 2005 case that is squarely on point, right? What kinds of First Amendment rights do lawyers have when they're arguing in court? And the Sixth Circuit said, you know, you might think, oh, First Amendment, super broad, yeah, probably covers lawyers. You'd have it exactly wrong. Here's what the court said in Mezabov, and they are quoting, by the way, extensively from relevant precedent in the district and also from the Supreme Court. It says, it is not surprising that courts have been reluctant to allow the First Amendment to intrude into the courtroom. At first blush, the courtroom seems like the quintessential arena for public debate, but upon closer analysis, it is clear this is not and never has been an arena for free debate. An attorney's speech in court and in motion papers has always been tightly cabined by various procedural and evidentiary rules, along with the heavy hand of judicial discretion. In fact, judges regularly fine attorneys and even throw them in jail from time to time as a direct consequence of attorneys' in-court speech, and it appears no circuit court has ever found this to violate the First Amendment. I could go on, but yeah, right, as you pointed out, right, Judge Parker essentially, like, said, this seems to be the law. We can and should discipline attorneys for speech that you would be perfectly fair to engage in just as an ordinary person. But, like, get that shit out of my courtroom. and she's 100% right. Like, nobody is saying we should, you know, round up and arrest QAnon idiots, right, who get onto Reddit and are like, I don't know. Joe Biden is secretly not the president, and there was a face-off thing, and they got into the secret basement of the pizza parlor at Comet Ping Pong. Right? Go ahead. Be crazy on your own dime. But when you professional, and this is really important to me because, you know, it's my profession, when you represent somebody, you are not there to opine as to your own views. You are there to engage in a tightly confined argument on behalf of your client, and you're limited to the stuff that you can do. Yeah,
and it reminds me of when I wrote my doctoral dissertation. They're like, this looks like your opinion right here. Do you have a citation for this sentence? This right here looks like something that you think. We aren't interested in what you think. We're interested in the previous body of knowledge and what you're adding to it. This right here, this looks like sort of something that you're concluding or hypothesizing. Do you have a whole section on how you tested this statement, or do you have a citation of somebody who's made this statement in the past? It's very constricted, and for a very good reason. And I absolutely love when she's like, I just, can you imagine having an argument where you're like, all right, well, I think Joe Biden is in cahoots with China. Great. Well, show me all of your evidence. Oh, there's too much of it. It would be embarrassing. You don't want me to waste your time with that. And then I say, but what if I have evidence disputing you? And not that this is based on reality, but it is. And so that's just that to see that argument play out in this hearing was bananas. Now, let's wrap this up by talking about, I know that the judge asked for some supplemental briefs, and you could sort of tell early on, she was like, Yeah, you can tell me if you want any supplemental briefs. By the way, I won't probably give you any unless I tell you that I want some. But she did it in a very kind of implied way. But she does want supplemental briefings on when these lawyers were made aware that they were coming in, that they were being, there was a motion of sanctions against them, right? Because a lot of their defense was, I didn't even know, bro.
Yeah. And there are two levels of argument that are being made here. It was really kind of very technical. On behalf of all of the Kraken lawyers, right, except put an asterisk by Lynn Wood. And by the way, that was my favorite moment of the day, was when Judge Parker asked Campbell, do you also represent Lynn Wood, right? And Campbell said, well, you know, to the extent that anybody can, I guess I do. Which is just, if your lawyer ever says that in open court, and Lynn Wood stepped up and was like, well, might be having to find a new lawyer,
probably
good
that.
Idea.
And it was actually the only thing I tweeted from the whole, when I was listening to the whole thing, was when Lynn Wood was like, just want everybody to know I had nothing to do with this. My name's not on it. Casino hands. I have no part in this. Peace out. You know?
Yeah.
Another defense.
So there are basically two different levels of argument about service of process. With respect to everybody who is not Lynn Wood, the argument is a technical defect in how the pleadings were served and whether they complied with all of the requirements of Rule 11. Okay, and what that means is you have to give the parties 21 days notice before you file your Rule 11 motions. You got to give them every chance to like correct the stuff that's wrong about the record and withdraw. I am confident in predicting that argument is going to go absolutely nowhere. It's a garbage argument. This judge doesn't care about it. And, you know, that whatever, you got to throw everything you can at the wall at this point because, you know, as Campbell realized halfway through this hearing, like his clients are losing and there's nothing that he can do to stop that from happening.
So she's just kind of crossing her T's and dotting her I's here saying, all right, well, send me your shit so that she can make sure that is settled.
Right. For that one. For Lynn Wood, there is the argument that you tweeted out that he has been making, which is, I don't even know. We're in a courtroom of some sort. Like, I don't even know why I'm here. My name is nothing.
What is my name again? Who are you?
And it is.
I'm not a cat.
Yeah. We have talked about this on opening arguments. I'm going to delve into the trap element a little bit more when we do a follow-up on this on a deep dive on OA on the Friday episode. So a little bit of a plug there. But this is designed to set a trap for Lynn Wood. And it is this. It is clear everybody in that room on that call knows that he's lying. The attorney for the city of Detroit that we've mentioned a bunch of times here, right, David Fink, knows that Lynn Wood is lying when he says, I don't have anything to do with any of this, and has introduced into evidence Lynn Wood's own pleadings from a pro hoc vice motion in Delaware in which he represents Carter Page. You and I have talked about that. And the court in Delaware, after watching Lynn Wood's behavior before and after the Capitol insurrection, on its own motion said, I don't want this asshole practicing in my court. I'm going to revoke his pro hoc vice motion unless, and so it was a show cause order, unless he can show good cause as to why I shouldn't. And in his response to the court's show cause order, Lynn Wood said, I'm an expert at this. I represent all sorts of election people, including I represent a group of plaintiffs in Michigan challenging certification.
So he used it as an argument in another jurisdiction to prove that he's not a piece of shit.
Right, when he thought it would help him. And so what this and so Lynn Wood is playing fast and loose here. And what Judge Parker did was said, because you heard Lynn Wood multiple times said, why don't we just do a hearing here? You can ask everybody on the call and they'll say, I have nothing to do with it. And Judge Parker very, very intelligently said, I'm going to give you the opportunity to brief this, Mr. Wood. And the reason she is doing that is because that will then be a document, a pleading that Lynn Wood, by and through counsel probably, will have to file under oath in this court, and he will have to take a position. And whatever position he takes will be contradicted by some record. So it is going to be delicious and juicy and wonderful, and I just can't wait to see that. That is due in 14 days, right? So
14 days. Okay, so she
July
did file.
26th. Yep.
She did put the order in for
yep.
that. Yep. Honor before July 26th. And are there any other pending date deadlines in this case?
So everybody, so there's going to be supplemental briefing by Campbell, who is going to raise the very technical service of process issue and going to lose. By Fink, who is there to show the connection that everyone has to the case, which principally will affect Emily Newman that we've talked about. By Lynn Wood. And by Stephanie Gentile, I have no idea what Stephanie's brief is going to say, but I can't wait to read it.
All right. It's going to be interesting for sure. So we'll get those. Are they all due on the 26th?
Everyone is due on the 26th. Then response within 7 days of that, and then that's it.
No other hearings, and the decision will follow.
And then so first week of August – you are going to see referrals for disbarment for Howard Kleinhandler and Sidney Powell at minimum.
That's what, you know what? That was exactly my prediction. She would refer to the chief judge on Powell and at least Powell, possibly Kleinhandler. And then there would be, I think that the rest of them would be barred from practicing in the Eastern District of Virginia. Not barred, but, the judge
prohibited.
Can say,
yeah,
you're prohibited from doing this Eastern District of Michigan, and possibly fines.
Yep. Oh, I think they will get fined, and I think they will get a wide-ranging imposition of attorney's fees. Will not be attorney's fees for the entire litigation, but it will be a lot.
Yep. Cool. So you think the same thing. All right. Sweet. We're in accordance in our beans.
That makes me feel good, yeah, about my pins and beans.
Pins and beans. I like it. All right, everybody. We're going to be right back. We've got a lot of other cleanup news that happened this week. We're going to cover that in the C block. And then, of course, we have comings and goings. So you don't want to miss
Woo!
That. It's a big one this week. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. It's AG. And I am happy and proud to announce we are launching our very own podcast network. It's called MSW Media. And it's going to feature the work of some incredibly talented and intelligent people, including Glenn Kirshner with Justice Matters, On Topic with Renato Mariotti, Prevail by Greg Oliar, Opening Arguments with Andrew Torres and Thomas Smith, The Bureau with Frank Fogluzzi. And that's just to name a few. Of course, there's The Daily Beans, Mueller, She Wrote, Clean Up on Aisle 45. Our network is woman-run and veteran-owned, and our mission is to curate news, politics, and justice and engage voters so we can win in 2022 and beyond. I am so proud of this community and this group of content creators, so please check us out at mswmedia.com and listen wherever you get your podcasts. Everybody, welcome back. We have a flurry of cleanup stories for you in this block. Andrew, you've already covered in detail Trump's ridiculous lawsuit against Twitter and Facebook on opening arguments, I assume?
Yes, indeed.
All right, we don't need to rehash that here. I covered it on Daily Beans, too. So let's start instead with Biden's Pentagon scrapping the $10 billion deal with Microsoft after Amazon sued for not being awarded the contract in 2019.
Yeah, and I do these kinds of bid protest cases, albeit usually on a slightly smaller scale on behalf of my clients. But here we go. So public statement last week, Department of Defense said that the Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure, which abbreviates to JEDI, I just love that. So the JEDI contract is a 10-year deal for classified data storage, cloud computing services to the military, does not meet its current needs, citing, quote, evolving requirements, increased cloud conversancy, and industry advances. Basically, you're not up to best practices speed with technology.
Interesting. Did they mention Amazon and their objections at all in this statement?
No, and you wouldn't expect them to. So what the Pentagon has been hinting for months that they were reconsidering JEDI, right? And it's not hard to see that those concerns get raised when you have a bid protester that is bombarding you with internal complaints, right? And that was the Amazon litigation. And so procedurally, the way that works is you have to exhaust your administrative remedies before you can go to court, right? And in the process of exhausting those administrative remedies, now, you know, you might think like, so, you know, the first level is you go back to the same decision makers and say, we think you made a mistake and you missed X. You will not be surprised to learn that, you know, the people who awarded the contract, you know, to Microsoft, when you say, we think you made a mistake, their first response is usually, well, we respectfully disagree, right?
But the government, you know, and I know this because I've done a bunch of these contract bids.
Yeah.
They have a process, which is you put out the bid, the people come in, you go through the things, you make a selection, people can object, then you have to reconsider, and then you can make a final decision, and then there can be an appeal. And then, you know, I mean, there's always this, and I'm sure the Pentagon is the same way. I mean, if it's probably more steps at the Pentagon than there was at the Department of Veterans Affairs, but, you know, there's this whole big long thing that I don't think got consideration.
Yeah, well, and you and Amazon would be, you know, sort of in the same camp on that. And this is common in government contract cases. You would say one of the most frequent reasons that is given to protest the awarding of a particular contract is to say, we think there was some kind of undue influence here. And that is, in fact, what Amazon told Forbes. They said that the decision to use Microsoft and not Amazon, think about this, was due to, quote, outside influence that has no place in the government, end of quote.
Yeah, and I assume we can mean they're referring to the fact that Trump hates Bezos, who owns Amazon, because he also owns the Washington Post, and that's only among other reasons that he hates Bezos. I mean, I remember when Trump tried to get the old pre-DeJoy Postmaster General to double Amazon shipping rates for no reason, and I was going like, that's a fucking impeachable offense. Why isn't anybody... That's what Nixon did and was impeached. Why isn't anybody doing anything about that? And then the GSA thing with the FBI thing. But I remember him trying to triple the Amazon shipping rates.
He had the DOJ instigate antitrust investigations into Amazon, which, by the way, totally welcome, right? Like we should absolutely look at the market power that Amazon has.
I'm not a cheerleader for Bezos billionaire here. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, you can't do this shit in government when you're making contract decisions.
Yeah, well, you're not supposed to be able to. So I completely agree with that. And I think if my business depended on doing business with the government, the last 4 years would have been a challenge, right? So, you know, even Microsoft is... you know, all but said they understand that this decision, saying, quote, the DOD faced a difficult choice, continue with what could be a years-long litigation battle or find another path forward.
Yeah, even if that path is to just give everyone a fair shot and go through the correct process and not apply weird biases, right? Because Microsoft might end up with this contract after all, but Amazon would be happy and probably not able to as much to litigate if we follow the rules. So, you know, I'm going to assume in grand government tradition, they'll rewrite the project probably and call for new bids.
Yeah, they will just release a new RFP. I need to tell you, right, like typically when you have a bid protest, I would say probably 20% of the time or less it's successful. And usually the remedy you get is not the remedy you ask for, right? Like, what you ask for when you bring a bid protest is it should have been us, make us the recipients instead. You almost never get that. But sometimes you will convince the government to say, you know what, we're just going to scrap that old contract altogether and we're going to replace it with a new one.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done here. So the Pentagon says that they're going to replace JEDI with a new program called the Joint Warfighter Cloud Capability and will solicit bids from both Amazon and Microsoft, and could award the deal to more than one company. So, that's a couple of good new bites at the apple for Amazon.
Yep. Over my 12 years in government service, I only saw this type of thing like a scrap and a redo done one time. And that was because the government actually wanted to go with a different bidder than they originally chose. But
yeah.
Because it takes a year and some bad shit happened in that year, they were like, we're going to scrap this and start again. Which is all legal. All right. In other cleanup news, the U.S. Commerce Department released a report this week on proposed auto tariffs that Trump refused to make public. What did that report say? And what are the implications here?
Oh boy. All right. So the report was released last Tuesday, and it outlined what everybody who is not a Trump voter already knows, right? Like Trump's intention to charge tariffs on vehicle and auto parts imports because they were deemed a national security threat. That is not the case, by the way. Lawmakers at the time, including Republican Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, pressed for the study's release, saying that that justification was unfounded, because it was.
Yeah, he was actually quoted. Toomey's quoted as saying, a quick glance confirms what we expected. The justification for these tariffs was so entirely unfounded that even the authors were too embarrassed to let it see the light of day.
Exactly. And the degree to which Trump was able to rewrite history in the making in front of his supporters is just, I could fill a dozen podcasts and 50 books. Anyway, the analysis focused on whether to impose tariffs on the auto imports under Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act. And that allows for duties without a vote by Congress if those imports would be deemed a national security threat.
Is that the same law, the Trade Expansion Act, that he used to put tariffs on steel and aluminum too?
It is, yeah. So the justification in this report for the auto and auto parts imports is absolutely ridiculous, right? The study determined that the national security risk for purposes of Section 232 includes the, quote, general security and welfare of certain industries beyond those necessary to satisfy national defense requirements. It found that of the excessive imports, quote, the serious effects resulting from the consequent displacement of production in the U.S. is causing a weakening of our internal economy that may impair the national security.
All right. Now, I would understand if you were going to import, like, missiles to use from Russia, that could pose a national security problem, because they would probably send you used pinball machine casings full of shoddy pinball machine parts. Used what?
Libyans.
Used bomb casings full of
used pinball machine parts.
Yes. So, okay, national security. But auto parts?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway.
It's a six-layer chain of inferences, right? That, like, if I don't put these tariffs on, that will competitively hurt the U.S. auto industry. If we competitively hurt the U.S. auto industry, then we lack domestic capacity to manufacture additional war machines in potential times of war, and that puts our national security at risk. And if that seems like a bizarre chain of inferences to you, congratulations, you're everybody who is not a Donald Trump sycophant.
That's the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, okay. It is.
Well, you know, I'm glad the new Commerce Department is out from under the thumb of droopy dog, Wilbur Ross. Next up, President Biden is setting the federal government's sights on the power of big tech and big telecom in a competition order that will urge more regulation and enforcement against the sectors.
Oh, yes. So the new EO includes over 70 different initiatives that are aimed at promoting competition in areas of the economy that the Biden administration finds a troubling amount of concentration, right? We alluded to this earlier, including technology markets, right? So the order takes aim at big tech by encouraging the FTC to adopt new rules on the accumulation of personal data and banning unfair methods of competition in online marketplaces, and adopting a policy giving more scrutiny to mergers by dominant online platforms, focusing on those involving smaller competitors, serial mergers, data accumulation, the effect on privacy, and the competition of free products.
Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah. Google, YouTube. Yeah.
Pretty much directly aimed at that. I'm very glad about this because all of us only get the choice of one cable provider. And the antitrust argument is, well, you can decide not to have cable. Right, cool, thanks. The White House also wants internet service providers to offer a broadband nutrition label, so to speak, detailing their internet packages to give consumers transparency when they're buying services. The executive order will encourage the FCC to reinstate net neutrality rules, prohibiting the blocking, throttling, or paid prioritization of web traffic that was repealed by Trump's FCC. I fucking love this. I love this because this throttling shit sucks.
Yeah, and it answers the libertarian argument on why you should permit throttling, right? Which is, well, you know, we have, and I'm not kidding, I have seen this, the argument of like, well, you know, if you look at Hungary's internet service provider, you have these slim down, super small ISPs that give you like, you know, 5 gigabytes of internet data per month for, you know, $3 a month. And we don't, you know, those are being driven out of the market here as if anybody wants to emulate, you know, former Eastern Bloc countries with respect to their internet. But
we should have that right.
Yeah, we should. And this will break out the data. And you will see, right, that when we reinstate, like, notice when we repealed net neutrality, all of a sudden we didn't have a wellspring of brand new ISPs providing $5 a month internet. And when it is reinstated, you will not see, you know, your ISP bills go up. But we could do an entire episode on net neutrality and that. I want to mention other initiatives that are meant to be pro-consumer include banning excessive early termination fees. That's a good idea. And ending exclusivity arrangements in apartment buildings, right? So you come in and say, hey, we're only going to install, you know, one particular carrier. Just a sampling, like I said, over 70 different initiatives designed to actually take on the problems of big tech, not, you know, a goofball lawsuit in Florida to call them the government for purposes of the First Amendment. Cough, cough. All right. Final cleanup news. The Biden administration released a new policy on Friday that largely prohibits the detention of pregnant, nursing, and postpartum women who have been caught crossing the border illegally.
Yes. So Biden has done so much so far to unwind the xenophobic clusterfuck created by Stephen Miller and the likes. This policy states that except in special circumstances where a woman's detention is mandatory, expectant mothers and those who have given birth up to 1 year previously will not be detained by ICE.
Yeah, and this is reinstating the previous longstanding policy of this country not to detain pregnant women. That policy, the only time in history that it was temporarily halted was, of course, under the other guy's administration. A DHS official said that the new policy codifies that practice and expands it to include those with children under one. And I would just add, just to make clear, I know we have a lot of skeptics on the left on this issue. I am certainly with you that I think the Biden administration needs to do more and needs to build up its credibility in terms of completely undoing the effects of having had right-wing white nationalists running the department for 4 years. So I want to tell you the bit about the exception for circumstances where a woman's detention is mandatory. That's because that is imposed by statute. And so you cannot, as a matter of executive order or rulemaking, disregard the plain authority of the statute. Right? If they tried to do that, that would render potentially all of this unconstitutional. It would get enjoined by a court. So it's not trying to create an exception there. This is a really, really good policy, and we need to recognize and give credit where credit is due.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is the cleanup block. Those are the stories that I found that were the big changes that I think pertain to the interests of folks listening to this program. So we will be right back with comings and goings.
Woo!
And there's a lot to discuss, so stick around.
Where's the spatula?
Okay, kids, let's go.
There's just one place to go for all your spatula needs.
Spatula City!
Spatula City! A giant warehouse of spatulas for every occasion. Thousands to choose from in every shape, size, and color. And because we eliminate the middleman, we can sell all our spatulas factory direct to you. Where do you go when you want to buy name brand spatulas at a fraction of retail cost?
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
And this weekend only, take advantage of our special liquidation sale. Buy 9 spatulas, get the 10th one for just 1 penny. Don't forget, they make great Christmas presents. And what better way to say I love you than with the gift of a spatula?
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
Hello, this is Cy Greenbloom, president of Spatula City. I like their spatulas so much, I bought the company.
Spatula City, 7 locations. We're in the yellow pages under spatulas.
My, where did you get that lovely spatula?
Spatula City, we sell spatulas, and that's all.
And finally, it's time for your favorite segment and mine, Comings and Goings. We begin with a long overdue and hearty welcome to Chantal Wong, who, if confirmed, would be the first out lesbian to hold an ambassador-level position in U.S. history. Now, you'd think this was a podcast from 1994 or something with that announcement, but no.
Yeah. President Biden announced over the weekend his intention to appoint Chantal Wong as U.S. Director of the Asian Development Bank, which works to foster economic growth in the Asia-Pacific region. If approved by the Senate, like you said, she will be the first LGBTQ plus person of color, as well as the first gay woman with the rank of ambassador.
Yeah, and like pretty much every Biden appointee we talk about in this segment, your Uncle Frank can't just hand wave Wong away as a diversity hire, right, with all the ugliness that that implies. She is eminently qualified for the job. She was previously appointed to the Asian Development Bank's board of directors by President Bill Clinton, so over 20 years ago. Has served as the CFO of Millennium Challenge Corp, as the budget director at NASA, and acting budget director at the Treasury Department.
Okay, so she's done a couple things, I guess.
Yeah.
Ms. Wong said, if I'm confirmed by the U.S. Senate, I will serve with humility and with the purpose of advancing U.S. interests at the Asian Development Bank and the region on behalf of my fellow Americans. She also thanked her mentor, the economist Alice Rivlin, the founding director of the Congressional Budget Office, that's the good old CBO, quote, yep, who has taught me about doing good and doing it right.
Yeah, you know, it's almost as if all of these wildly qualified candidates have always been out there, but it's taken, you know, a genuinely progressive administration to increase the visibility of minorities. And by the way, you don't have to take my word, Biden cheerleader, for it. The LGBTQ Victory Institute, which works to advance LGBTQ elected and appointed government officials, reported that as of late April, Biden has appointed at least 200 LGBTQ officials, quote, exponentially more than any other president at this point in their administration. And the Victory Institute has indicated that by their measures, the White House is well on its way to achieving parity between LGBTQ representation in appointments and the community's presence in the general public, which we estimated about 5.5 to 5.6%. So that's amazing progress. Yeah.
Wow. To have the cabinet, the White House,
look like America.
It's incredible. And let's dig in a little more. The Washington Post interviewed Anise Parker, president of the Victory Institute, who praised Wong for raising the bar for representation, but said of her nomination, it's about more than making history. Chantal will represent the most powerful nation in the Asian Development Bank at a time when many of its member states criminalize LGBTQ people and deny them the right to marry. Her presence and leadership can change perceptions of the LGBTQ people among representatives from other nations, potentially inching countries, other countries, toward more acceptance of LGBTQ citizens.
That is such an excellent point. You know, it's the core, the cornerstone of the out movement, right? The idea that it's easy to demonize people of another group as foreign and scary when you don't work with incredibly competent representatives of that group on a daily basis. So it's part of why I love and continue to emphasize that the White House is focused here on competency, right? So in their own press release, they don't discuss the LGBTQ elements. The top line is, she is, quote, a leading authority in international development policy with over 30 years of experience in the multidisciplinary field that includes finance, technology, and the environment. She's been recognized throughout her career for transforming critical processes affecting the whole of government.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to pass over the historical nature of this, though, because one closing remark from Parker, she said, President Biden's administration is already the most LGBTQ inclusive in history. And his appointees have shattered longstanding political barriers through thought unthinkable not long ago. With the thousands of appointments yet to be made, we will continue to work with the administration to not only ensure our community is equitably represented, but the trans and non-binary people, LGBTQ people of color, and LGBTQ women are fully represented as well.
Here. So that's a coming. It's also nice when this administration fires somebody who really, really deserves it. And on Friday, President Joe Biden fired the Commissioner of Social Security, woo-hoo, Andrew Saul, yeah, after he refused to resign and accepted the resignation of Deputy Commissioner David Black. Both were, of course, Trump appointees.
Yeah, I love this. Now, Biden named Kalolo Kijakazi as acting commissioner while the administration conducts a search for a permanent commissioner and deputy commissioner. Kijakazi currently is the deputy commissioner for retirement and disability policy at the Social Security Administration.
Yeah. So, look, this firing came after a Department of Justice OLC opinion memo that indicated that Saul could be removed despite the fact that the statute says he can only be fired for neglecting his duties for malfeasance. That analysis, and again, put an asterisk next to an OLC memorandum, the last guy relied on those an awful lot, and we've been duly critical. But I have to tell you, I love that this one repeatedly cited Supreme Court precedent from the past couple of years that limits Congress's rights to set conditions on the executive branch. So it was kind of a, you know, hoist on your own petard moment. So I don't want to get behind presidents hiding behind the OLC, but I love that the Biden administration has taken the let's fire them first and let God sort them out approach to this.
The OLC, yeah, you know me.
I just wanted to hear you give us a little OPP.
Removing Saul, better not call Saul, I guess, was popular with the Democratic base. And predictably, Republicans with a straight face accused Biden of politicizing the agency and pointed to Saul's confirmation by a bipartisan Senate vote in 2019. You can't politicize. I can't believe you politicized this firing. And I'm like, oh, like the firing of Jim Comey for investigating you, like that kind of thing. Anyway, nonsense. As Senate Finance Committee Chairman Ron Wyden pointed out, presidents typically choose their executive branch appointees with broad discretion. Saul was confirmed by a Senate vote of 77-16 in 2019 to a 6-year term that would have otherwise expired in January of 2025. But wasn't there a big old fucking debate that the president can fire all these officers at will, as long as it's not done for corrupt reasons?
Yeah, I seem to recall that position being accepted by both sides, extending back to 2017. But that did not stop our favorite turtle, Mitch McConnell, who knows a little something about unprecedented dangerous politicization, to call the ouster, quote, an unprecedented and dangerous politicization of the Social Security Administration.
Fuck off. Yeah, politicization of Social Security Administration, which we would like to keep.
Yeah, I guess, I suppose wanting to end it entirely does not count as politics to Mitch McConnell.
No, of course not. Right. Yeah, I only want to fire the chief of the Social Security Administration when I got Social Security. That's the only time we should do it, according to Mitch McConnell. Well, either way, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, and a hearty fucking one at that, too. I hated that guy. all right. That's our show.
There you go. What else need be said? That's it. Why are you still here?
To continue the over.
Yeah. It was an A+ Ferris Bueller reference earlier. I was thinking of Spaceballs with the Lone Star. You are my nephew's cousin's brother's third cousin's former roommate. What does that make us? Absolutely nothing, which is what you are about to become.
Yeah. That's so good. That was on the other day. I had a good time watching it. Should we assign everyone an 80s movie to watch for next week?
Oh, yeah.
I think I saw the funniest meme because, you know, they're redoing Sex and the City and Samantha's not going to be part of it. So Andrew McCarthy Andrew McCarthy actually took a picture of the three of the Sex and the City girls and installed himself carrying a mannequin.
Oh, God.
To say, I've got Kim Cattrall for you. And I lost my shit. So I recommend everybody watch Hollywood and Mannequin this week.
All right. Well, I have not seen Mannequin since the original Brat Pack days. I'm positive that it holds up and that the character of Hollywood in no way will wind up being an offensive stereotype. I look forward to reviewing this movie, and we'll check back in a week from now. But yeah. Allison, this is, as always, it's such a joy to do the show with you.
Absolutely, and we'll see you all next week. Don't forget to listen to Opening Arguments and Daily Beans and Mueller, She Wrote and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
In fact, you can find them all at mswmedia.com. Any show that you probably want to hear, you can find it there. So check it out at mswmedia.com. Until next week, I've been Allison Gill.
And I'm Andrew Torres.
And this has been Cleanup on Aisle 45.
Cleanup on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill and Andrew Torres, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo designer by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Cleanup on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com.
They might be giants that have been on the road for too long.
Too long.
And they might be giants aren't even sorry.
Not even sorry.
And audiences like the shows too much.
Too much.
And now they might be giants are playing their breakthrough album, Flood.
All of it.
And they still have time for other songs.
They're fooling around.
Who can stop They Might Be Giants and their liberal rock agenda?
Who?
No one. This ad was paid for with somebody else's money.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.